Noon. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. We have three cases on our docket this afternoon. We have two cases on our 1:30 docket, and then we will take a brief recess, and then we will hear our case that's on our 3 o'clock docket. For our first case, we have Parker County Appraisal District versus James D. Francis. If the clerk would please call the case. Counsel?
Good afternoon to you as well. I appreciate your hearing our case today. I don't think it's a complicated case, but it's not quite as simple as it may be portrayed to be. Prior to getting into the main issue that I want to that we bring in this appeal, if the court doesn't mind, I would like to skip to my second and third issues just because they're much simpler, quicker, and I would like to get to talk about them today, and sometimes I run out of time when I don't do that. So I just want to respond to the appellee's claim that we waived or somehow did not preserve our right to argue the issue of whether there was insufficient evidence of the use of the property as a homestead. Now, we're talking about one tract, one particular tract, not the whole property, but the one tract that is commercial property and that is receiving agricultural use, that was determined by the court to be qualified as a homestead, 41469, I believe. And I don't want to let that issue go because that issue is really important. That the stipulations in the trial court said nothing about the use of that tract. Mr. Carden, in his response brief, said that they did because he said that his house located on the property is his residence. However, that's not the point. There are three tracts, and he's always been getting a homestead on his residence. That's a 1 acre tract. This is a 3 acre tract that's getting ag and that's commercial property. And he doesn't say anything about the use of this particular tract. He just says he owns three contiguous tracts. He has a house on somewhere on that property. And since this property was never appraised as a homestead before, and there's no evidence that is used in connection with the residential use of his property, that's what we contend, is that there's no evidence to prove that it's entitled to a homestead. The homestead exemption requires, and again, I know this court is very familiar with the requirements of strict construction of exemptions. You know, there's many, many cases saying that, and this is an exemption. And it requires that you resolve doubts against the property receiving an exemption. If there's any doubt as to whether the property is being used for residential purposes, then it's not entitled to the exemption. And there is no evidence here that this particular tract is being used for residential purposes. So I don't see how there's any evidence to support the court's finding that it does qualify as a homestead. And another thing that the appellee claims is that we waived that argument because we did not also argue that because we didn't also argue that it's not entitled to an over 65 residence homestead exemption. And I don't see how that makes any difference, because whether it's an over 65 exemption or any kind of homestead exemption, it still has to qualify as a residential property. So those two go hand in hand. You can't get an over 65 homestead exemption unless it is your residential homestead. They're both under the same section of the tax code. That's section 1.13. Sorry, 11.13. So I totally disagree that we waived anything on that. The stipulations, they say we didn't request findings of fact and conclusions of law. But I don't see how, again, that makes a difference because this was a stipulated facts case. There was no evidence introduced. And the authorities say that it's not even proper to request findings of fact and conclusions of law in a case involving stipulated facts. The facts are what they are. They're stipulated to, and it was the plaintiff's burden to put on evidence that this particular tract is, in fact, used for purposes that are in connection with the residential use of the property. There is no such evidence. Now, the main issue is, you know, whether this property can qualify for both a homestead exemption, if there were, assuming there were evidence that it's used in connection with the residential occupancy of the property, can it qualify as a homestead and as property used principally for open space, for agricultural use? And that's the 1D1 exemption.
Isn't there a distinction between agricultural use and open space?
Yes, Justice Walker, there is. This is 1D1.
And this is open space. Right.
Correct. Yes. But they're still both, in both instances, they're required, the property is required to be used principally for agricultural use. I mean, that's in both sections of the tax code. So,
as I read it, he makes a distinction between principal residence and used principally.
Yes.
And they are not, it is not principally both for homestead and for open use. It's his position.
Yes, I understand that, Justice McCoy, and I do want to get to that. And as I said, it's not a complicated case. However, it is not as simple as the appellee is making it seem either. And what I mean by that is their position is, well, it doesn't say you can't get both special tax treatments. It doesn't say that anywhere in the code, so you can. I mean, that's their position. And they say, you're right, Justice McCoy, they say that because, now clearly, Section 2351, the open space provision, does say principal use must be agriculture. Their position is that because the homestead provision, the Section 1113, doesn't say it has to be used principally as your homestead. It just has to be your principal residence. But I think that's a little, I think that's glossing over a little shallow, really, reading of the statute. My position is that, you know, no, it doesn't say that, but if you really look at the rest of the statute and you look at the code in its entirety and you try to reconcile these provisions, I think they do have to be both. I think each special treatment does require that it be the principal use, and I'll tell you why. Because obviously 2351 says that, no question about that. 1113 doesn't. However, it does say that it has to be the whatever property you have. Yes, you can get up to 20 acres, but you can only get the homestead exemption on property that you're using in connection with your residential occupancy. And if you also look at Section 2355A, it says, or sorry, 2355I, let me back up. I'll get to that in a moment. The other thing in 1113 is that it doesn't say principal use as a homestead. However, if you look down at 1113K, it says you're not entitled to the homestead exemption on property that is used principally for another purpose. Okay? So I think that you have to read the whole statute, and I think that that implies
but
that...
But I believe that K, 11.13K, is talking about a residence homestead, a qualified residential structure. I'm not seeing how that is applying to the property.
Well, I think it does, Justice Walker, with all due respect. I mean, you're entitled to a homestead under 1113 for your residence and the land used in connection with the residential occupancy.
Okay, so if someone has a ranch and it's their home, it's their residence, and they're also having agricultural use. Your position is that they can still only get one exemption.
Well, yes. The answer, short answer, is your question. They can get a homestead on the part of the property that they use as a homestead, as a residence. And this is very typical throughout the state. That's what most appraisal districts do. They say, okay, this part, you want your homestead on this. Tell me how many acres you use in connection with your homestead. Then tell me what part you want ag on or open space. I mean, that's very common. And I think that 1113K does apply to the land also, because look at it this way. If you have 20 acres and you have a house on, you know, a part of it, and you have a yard there, and you may have a home garden, you may have, you know, structures, garden structures or whatever, but then the bulk of your property, what if it's a landfill? Okay, it's a landfill. You charge for it. But you say, well, yeah, but I throw my trash in there too, you know? I mean, you it's a different use. And I think also agriculture is a different use. Agriculture, you cannot get an open space appraisal designation under the code if you just have a hobby, you know, a little garden in your backyard. What you have to prove to get open space appraisal is that you're using it as a prudent, typical farmer or rancher would use it. In other words, you're doing all the things that are required and that are typical and prudent farming or ranching practices. And it implies that you're putting effort into it. It implies a business, if you will. It's not for it's for a hobby garden. And you have to have a certain number of acres to make it a viable farming or ranching operation.
Well, isn't what you have to have is agricultural use to the degree of intensity generally accepted in the area?
Yes, that is true. What I'm referring to, and I cited it in my brief, is that there's guidelines. The comptroller's guidelines have been published to sort of assist appraisal districts for determining what use is, you know, agricultural and what use is recreational. And the guidelines clearly say that recreational use does not qualify as agricultural use.
Okay, I want to go back to subsection K real quick of 11.13, and because I'm still not seeing how that helps your position, because it says that a qualified residential structure does not lose its character as a residence homestead if a portion of the structure is rented, and we're not talking about a portion of the structure here.
Well, that's true, technically, but I believe you have to look at the statute as a whole. And it, again, if you have two different uses on your property, just because you have 20 acres, doesn't mean it's all used in connection with residence, you know, residential occupancy of your property. I mean,
well,
that's our
position.
I
would agree with that, but I don't think that that's what Kay says.
I don't think it says specifically that, but all I'm saying is that you have to look at the statute as a whole, and I believe it's pretty self-evident that if you have property, part of which you're using as a residence, and the statute does say that your property, that you get the land that is used in connection with the residential occupancy of the property. You have to look at that. You have to look at the whole thing, and I pose to you again, if you have 20 acres and you have a house on part of it and you're operating a business on the other part, I think it's our position is that there are two different uses. And if I could go on to explain why we believe that, in addition to what we've already discussed, again, I said at the outset, you have to look at the tax code as a whole. And I think that what we're trying to discern here is legislative intent, clearly. Does the legislature think that just because they don't say in the homestead section you can't get qualify as both a homestead and a farm, just because it doesn't say that, I don't think that automatically means that's the case. There are several different treatments that are provided in the tax code for open space land, and for homestead land, and they're totally different. And I think we have to look at that and say, well, there's some reason why, you know, the legislature did this. For example, rollback, and in fact, that's what we've got going on in this case. There's supposed to be a rollback or a imposition of additional taxes whenever open space land changes to something else. And so if you say, well, you know, this is open space land, but it's also a homestead, you know, that doesn't apply. You can't do that. Now, I know that one of the things I want to talk about, and I'm glad I have a few minutes to rebut, because Mr. Cardin's going to talk about 2355A, and I didn't really get to that. I think that section, in fact, supports our position as well. What it says is that normally when you change the use of property from open space to anything, I'm done. Should I sit down and talk on rebuttal?
Yes. Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. Your Honors, I don't normally do this, but I would start by agreeing with my opposing counsel in this section of their brief, page 12 to be specific. The point of this case is set out there pretty well. Appley, my client, Mr. Francis, is attempting to avoid the rollback penalty, which is imposed when you change open space land into something else. I'll be blunt. That's exactly what Mr. Francis was hoping to accomplish in this process. There's nothing unconstitutional or illegal about not paying taxes that you don't legally have to pay. I think Justice Learned Hand once said, everyone has their legal duty to pay every dollar of tax that they owe and not $1 more. In this particular case, Mr. Francis was already receiving the open space valuation on these three tracts, or at least the two larger tracts of property. There's the 1 acre where the house is, there's 9 acres, and then there's the 3 acres that are really at issue here. Well, in the course of time, suddenly that 3 acre tract became very attractive to place a commercial valuation, presumably because of its location. And so in reading the provisions of the tax code, you can claim up to 20 acres in connection with your use of that property as your residence. So filed the application, that's in the record. It's a short record, these are short briefs, but apparently this particular question has not come up in Texas that I could find or that Ms. Hargrove could find. No court seems to have dealt with this. I agree, you do look at the statutes as a whole, but the courts in Texas have been clear that in looking at tax statutes, as a general rule, you construe tax statutes in favor of the taxpayer and against the taxing units and the taxing authorities. Now, she's correct in saying that exemptions are narrowly construed against the taxpayer, but the question there is one of qualification. You have methods of value, like interstate allocation and all those other methods of arriving at value, then you have exemptions. They're two different tracks, essentially, and the question apparently that's never quite been asked before is, can a property qualify for both? There's nothing inconsistent with using property to the degree of intensity generally accepted in the area as agriculture, as Mr. Francis has done, as the appraisal district has recognized. He already had that open space valuation coming into this case. So the only lingering question was, can he claim his house and the surrounding acreage that he owns, a grand total of 13 acres, for his residence homestead? And the only question there is, does it qualify? He's over 65, that was without question. He uses the property as his principal residence. He doesn't have another residence. And there is nothing in the record to suggest that any portion of his use of that property to the degree of intensity generally accepted in Parker County, at least, for agricultural use, but that's in any way inconsistent with his use of that property as a residence homestead. It seems logical, therefore, reading the code to suggest you can have both. And the point of that is, and I think, you know, stepping back a little bit, with roads coming in places they didn't used to come, with property values on the rise in different parts of Texas, we don't want people being taxed out of their family farms just because suddenly their their properties happen to be located next to roads that maybe didn't exist when they first owned the property. So in this particular case, you have a 3-acre tract that suddenly was given a sharp uptick in value, and granted the taxable value, the assessed value under open space valuation was still very small. That's stipulated in the record. So the only lingering question is, can he claim this as part of his exemption, a residence exemption? There was no problem with the value on the 1-acre tract and the 9-acre tract. Those were given a residential value of around $17,000 per acre, I believe is in the record. And so when we presented the stipulations as to what the values would be to Judge Quisenberry and argued the law, his conclusion was the property can qualify for both. There's nothing inconsistent with 11.13. For example, 11.13K does clearly limit the provision of that section to the structure. There's no discussion that the structure is being used for multiple things. The only example I could come up with would be living in a horse barn that you then use for a commercial, horse riding training facility, where portion of that building, that structure, might be used for a non-residential purpose, but you still might be able to qualify for a portion of the resident's homestead exemption. In this case, it's his home, it's his acreage, it's already qualified for the open space appraisal, and using the simple language of 11.13, it looks as if it qualifies for residence homestead. There's nothing incompatible about the uses that's in the record. There's nothing incompatible about the uses in real life. There's no obvious glaring error. It's not being used as a car dealership in a residence. There's not being used as a landfill in a residence. There's no suggestion that the uses are in fact incompatible. The section that Ms. Hargrove mentioned at the very end of her argument, the 2355, is part of that section of the code dealing with what happens in the event of a rollback. The use does change, and now suddenly there are going to be that 5-year look back of penalties to recapture some of that value. Well, if you designate part of your land that apparently is already qualified for either an agricultural or open space valuation, when you designate that and claim it as part of your residence homestead, that's not a change in use. There should be no triggering event, therefore triggering a rollback, just because Mr. Francis now claims that 3 acres as part of his residence homestead.
And that's under section 2355I?
That's correct, Your Honor. So there's no rollback penalty. It doesn't suddenly change the use that would trigger that rollback penalty if you now claim that land as part of your residence homestead. Now, there's not going to be a flood of change out there. A lot of these folks probably already have the land claimed as part of their residence homestead. I don't foresee a big influx of litigation in this area, mainly because the qualifications are pretty strict. It has to be a house in connected tracts of land. It can't be, I'm going to claim that tract over there that I just bought right in the middle of downtown. That's now connected to my house and 10 acres on the outskirts of town. It doesn't work like that. The qualifications are simple enough that you can look at them and see this isn't going to create a huge problem for appraisal district or anyone else. I understand that they don't like it. I understand that they wish that the code said something other than what it does. But just looking at the text of the statute, I don't think there's any inconsistency between Mr. Francis having both residence homestead limited by what the legislature has decided. Can't go more than a house and 20 acres. If Mr. Francis had 100 acres, we wouldn't be here arguing that he's entitled to residence homestead for the other 80. It would be a house and 20. That's all he's entitled to use under the constitutionally protected residence homestead exemption. The other side of it's already been decided. The open space value has already been placed on the property. And so we're just left with, are these consistent statutes, or are they, as Ms. Hargrove argues, are they worlds apart and you can't have each? I think if the property qualifies for both, because they're different things, one's value, one's an exemption. People talk about agricultural valuation or an ag exemption on their property. That's not what it is. So Texas courts have said this is a method of valuing property that's different. They wouldn't be allowed to call it an exemption unless it was constitutional. So with that, Your Honor, unless there are further questions from the court, I'm basically done. There's nothing else that I can offer than what's been in our brief, that the uses of this property are not shown as inconsistent in the record. We believe the record speaks for itself at this point, and that the ruling of the court ought to be upheld. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Rebuttal?
Just very quickly, I do want to talk about 2355A, because it does not, as Mr. Carden say, it does not say that just because you claim part of the land as your residence homestead, the property, there's no change in use. What it says is there is no penalty imposed for the change of use. That if what it says is that the use does not change for the purposes of subsection A. Subsection A is a section that imposes the penalty. And then it goes on to say it does not change for purposes of the penalty simply because the owner changes the use from agriculture to residential. That's another thing that it, I mean, I think when you look at that, why would the legislature have put that provision in the code unless it was understood that, yeah, when you change the use from agriculture to residential, that's going to trigger a rollback. But they put this in here so that it doesn't trigger a rollback penalty. I think it implies that actually the use is changing when you do that. The only other thing that I want to talk about is just last Mr. Carden's, again, comment. I don't see why he can't do this. And he says that, you know, this agriculture or open space use is just a method of determining value. It is not value. It is productivity value, but it's based on use. And I think clearly we see, you know, that the code clearly says that's got to be the principal use. And I can understand why Mr. Francis didn't put a stipulation in there, didn't say anything to the effect that he uses this 3-acre tract principally or part of his homestead, because I think if he would have put that in writing, then he would have been concerned that he would get, you know, a rollback on that property because the use has changed. He wants to continue to get ag on it. No, he won't get a rollback penalty because of 2355I. But the point is, I don't think he wants to put that in writing because they're two different uses. And I know that I feel like that's pretty obvious from looking at all the different treatments that they receive under the code. And again, just because the homestead section doesn't say you can't get both, doesn't mean you can get both. Doesn't mean that's what is intended when you look at all the other provisions in the code that do treat them so differently. And I think that it is a problem. It's not just that the appraisal district doesn't like it. The way we look at it is that we believe that it does frustrate legislative intent for a property to escape rollback. The purpose of rollback, you know, additional taxes is, yeah, you're going to get this very valuable tax treatment, but when you change the use, we're going to penalize you. I think that, you know, that's an issue. There it's clear that they should be treated differently. They get two very different tax treatments, and I think they both do require principal use as one or the other. So that is our position, and we appreciate your consideration.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you for your briefing and for your argument here today. It's been very helpful to the court. Your case is submitted, and you are free to go about your business. We'll give you a couple minutes and for the next case to come forward.